J6, number 8B.
And God created the great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let fowl multiply in the earth. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day. So here we say, and God said, Let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creatures that have life. That would be, what would we say, that would be, what in the waters, what would we have in the waters that are the moving creatures that have life? Would be fish, just keeping it very literal. And fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven, that would be what? The birds. And therefore the waters brought forth abundantly every living creature and every winged fowl after their kind. And God blessed them, be fruitful and multiply, and that was the fifth day. So basically, as you say then, that at this particular day, the fifth day, we have God creating the waters to bring forth abundantly the fish and the fowl. So we have the creation in abundance of fish and in abundance the fowl. Okay. Then we go on to the sixth day, which is a bit longer, starting with Genesis 1:24. And God said, Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So in scientific text interpretation, we say to ourselves, now what is new? What has been created that hasn't been created before in the sixth day, still using biblical language? All right, animals. And man. That's very good. Because it says, let the earth bring forth living creatures. Cattle, creeping things, beast and earth. That wasn't created before, was it? No.
Why would he create man?
Well, that's a good point. And when we get to the metaphysical interpretation, ask that question. But we don't want to ask that now, do we? Because we're just writing down what happened. But after we write down what happened to make sure we get that exactly correct, then we'll interpret it. But that's a very nice question. And then, as Ellen said so rightly, the next point was that man was created. So we have the creation of the animals and man in the sixth day. And animals first, as Virginia noticed, and man second. Then it sums up the seventh day, Genesis 2:1-3. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. So what seems to go over and over that's happening here on the seventh day? What do we hear? All right, has anything been created anew? No. It doesn't start out in saying, and God said, let there be, as that happened in all the other days, does it? It just says, thus the heaven and the earth were finished. Creation is finished, and all the hosts of them. Nothing new has been created. It says it's finished now. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, and he rested. And then he blessed the seventh day. So there's no new creation. But what is being brought out? That creation is complete, it's finished, and he rested. Mm-hmm. All right.
Good job.
Good job. All right, as long as you go for it, we'll go on. Hmm? All right, that's very good. Now, you see what we did? We went in, and this is important in text interpretation, that we stick literally to what the text says. We take out what it says in an epitomized form, even when we go to the textbook. That avoids the danger of any personal interpretation coming in too fast. We've got to make sure we know what the text says. So we did that. Now we have the freedom to translate, because we know we don't interpret the text literally. That has nothing to do with Christian Science. I said that at the beginning of the class, that our platform is we don't interpret the Bible and the textbook literally, I said. We interpret it symbolically. That's the platform that this class has been given. So therefore, we go and look for the symbolic interpretation, not the literal. So because that's our platform, we have the right to go in and interpret it now metaphysically, first of all. And then scientifically. So let's look at it from the standpoint of metaphysics. So far we just have the biblical symbols. Right? So we go forward, and then, as we said just before the break, let's start now with what we have done, where we've just ascertained the biblical symbols in order to go on now to metaphysics. And as I said before the break, that we have already set the platform that we are not going to interpret the Bible literally but symbolically, and so therefore that allows us now to go on and to build on that platform. So we look at the first day, which we see has a main point of light. Now if we take that as a symbol, what could we say, perhaps, that light would mean seen metaphysically? What would light stand for? What is light as a symbol standing for? What does light mean metaphysically? Pat? Mind or yes? Understanding? You have a feeling it means light. When there's light, there's somehow mind, understanding. Anyone else? Uh-huh. Just to yourself, not what any book says. I want you to see if you can ascertain it for yourself. So light might mean mind, understanding. What else would light?
Enlightenment,
maybe. Yes. Intelligence. Light means enlightenment, intelligence. So you're getting the feel, aren't you? So we see then that we could say that then that the first day, where it says, and God said, let there be light, and the light was divided from the darkness, that light can stand for intelligence or creative ability or ideas. That's what light means metaphysically. Therefore, we could translate that first big point of the first day by saying that God manifests itself or declares itself as intelligence, as a creation of ideas, as that intelligent creation of ideas, or that God manifests itself as intelligence. Now, if we took that a bit further, what would be then the science behind that? That's when we ask for the capitalized term. When we translate something from the biblical symbol into metaphysics, now into the categories. Now, what category of being, either the nature of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, or the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science, the operation of God, or the levels of science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science, what category of being, and specifically what aspect of that category, allows us to talk about that God manifesting itself as intelligent, that intelligent God?
Mind.
Certainly we see that Mrs. Eddy shows that the divine mind is that intelligence, isn't it? So you see that interpreted spiritually, we would say that the first day of creation is saying, let there be light, let there be mind, let there be intelligence. You see? All right. Then, that's very good. Now let's just go on to the next one, the second day. And there we just had the plain biblical symbol. And God said, let there be a firmament, and the firmament divided the waters. Now, metaphysically speaking, and again, being an introductory class, I don't expect you to know these things. I just repeat myself. It's just to exercise you in the method, teach you the method when you're home, how to reason, how to think these things out. So what might firmament mean, metaphysically speaking? What is a firmament? No, just literally. What does that word firmament mean?
Divides.
Because a firmament in those days, they believed that the earth was flat, and that they believed that there was a canopy of the sky above the flat earth. You had your flat earth, and then you had the canopy or the sky. And that sky was called the firmament. The canopy was the firmament. And that they believed that there were waters above the sky, and that there were waters below the earth. And so the firmament was the canopy of the sky, which divided the waters above the sky. They just felt that there was water up here, and water dripped through the sky onto the earth, you see. That's the world view. It was very limited. We know the struggle Columbus had to break that world view that the earth was flat. And so, therefore, and that was only in, 1492 or so, when he went out to prove that the earth was round. So it isn't always that man had a round view of the world. It was a flat, and the sky was flat too. And that was the firmament. So they used the term firmament, or the sky, because they wanted to show that which does what? Divides. The firmament, or sky, divided the waters above from the waters below. And the waters above the firmament were considered pure and clean. But the waters under the firmament were considered dirty, because they were in the earth down below, and that's where the dead were buried. So they were contaminated, impure. So the firmament was dividing the pure waters from the impure waters. So firmament, metaphysically interpreted, stands for that which divides, the line of demarcation, which divides that which is pure from that which is impure. You see? So, actually, there it would be the separation, the division of the pure from the impure. I have here the only. Well, that is taking it a bit even farther. The only understanding. Well, it's mainly the line of demarcation. It says here we could interpret it as the onlyness of spiritual reality. It's the line of demarcation separating the real from the unreal, and bringing understanding. But the main point there, which I should have down there, it's really that line of demarcation. That's what the firmament is. It's that dividing line that separates the real from the unreal. Now, which category of being and which specific value within it allows us to talk about the fact that that God is that line of demarcation which separates the real from the unreal? Which category being and which specific value lets us say that we have that ability, that that divine mind of the first day has the ability to discern what is real from what is unreal? That the mind of the first day can have that line of demarcation. What would that be? Gwen?
Spirit.
All right. So we see then that the second day interpreted metaphysically and scientifically would say, and God said, let there be spirit. And let that spirit separate what is real from unreal. And then what we will see is the first day always hooks up to the second day. So where it said, God said, let there be mind, that all intelligent mind. Now is the second day, that all intelligent mind is spirit. That all intelligent mind has the ability to separate what is real from the unreal. There's always a flow from the first to the second day, and that's another exercise that we can do with ourselves. Why is the first day first, and why is the second day second? Why isn't the second day first? Why didn't they begin to say, and God said, let there be a firmament? Why did they begin with, let there be light? It was because we need the faculty of mind and its intelligence, which is the second day, can discern what is real from what is unreal. And spirit is just a symbol of discerning real from unreal, because spirit handles the opposite. Spirit is the only. And it is that category which lets us talk about the fact that there's only the real and not the unreal. It handles duality. So there's a logic in the days. We begin with the intelligence of mind, the first step. And the second step that tells us what is real from what is unreal, the second day. See, we're getting a story built up about ourselves every day. It isn't something that literally happened in time. You see that this becomes a science of timeless ideas about ourselves when interpreted symbolically. Totally different outcome than a literal interpretation. All right, so then we go on to the third day where we said, and God said, let the dry land appear, and that dry land had the seed within itself. Therefore, to interpret dry land metaphysically, you can almost get the feeling that so far in the first, second, and third day, we had God creating the light, and then that separating the waters above from the waters below. And now all the waters are gathered together and the dry land appears. What is it when something is gathered together and dry land appears? How could that be interpreted symbolically, dry land? What does it mean when there's something like water? What is water? Is water definite? Water is kind of indefinite, isn't it? It falls through your fingers. But when waters are gathered together and dry land appears, dry land is definite. You can step on it. Solid. It's definite. So you can see that, symbolically speaking, that they're trying to show that that dry land signifies, and now, if you go out from the first and second day, now that will bring out your definite identity. Your definite identity appears. And it has a seed within itself. It reproduces itself. Your identity has the ability to reproduce itself. So we could say that the third day is about the definite, unchanging, and self-reproducing identity which names and defines all. Which synonymous term allows us to talk about or category of being, but we're in the flow of synonymous terms, so this just assume now that it is that category. But if it is the category of the nature of God, what synonymous term allows us to talk about the fact that we have an unchangeable, definite identity which reproduces itself, that is never lost, that always reproduces itself? What would that be? Soul? Okay. Soul is that synonymous term that, so therefore the third day is just in symbolically speaking is saying, let there be soul. Let there be that unchangeable identity that always can reproduce itself. It never changes. It's always the same. It's really that science that never changes, the science of an unchanging identity that always changes. It's a wonderful science of soul there that we'll talk about later. But basically that identity is always the same and can always reproduce itself. All right. Then for the fourth, taken literally, we have God said, let there be lights for signs and seasons, days and years, ruling over the day and the night. So we have the lights of the sun, the moon, and the stars. Now, what is this talking about in symbols for metaphysical ideas? These lights, which are for signs and for seasons, for days and for years, ruling over the day and the night. What is the sun, the moon, and the stars? What did that mean to those people in that time? What was their worldview? What were they using at that time as a system for governing their life according to sun, the moon, and the stars? Pardon? Guidance? Mm-hmm.
They,
kind of government, right. They always felt that the signs and the season and the days and the years, that was a form of guidance throughout their life and of government. So the sun and the moon and the stars, it was a system of government, a system of guiding. Now, they, in those days, had also that system of astrology to govern and guide their lives. They looked up to the heavens and they gave the sun, the moon, and the stars different powers. And so that was a false system of government then, but they said that governed their life. The way the planets were positioned and everything, that was a sense of governing their life. That's how we got astrology. It was from the sun, the moon, and the stars, and the way they moved throughout the heavens at different signs and seasons. So you see, the biblical writers took the symbols of the day, but gave them higher meaning. And they say, oh no, that's a false system of government. That's a mental system. That's a false calculus. That really, that your true system of government is in God, the divine system governing the universe. That's the true system you want to learn. And therefore, which synonymous terms allows us to talk about the divine system of God governing the universe? And which synonymous term talks about the divine system? Principle, okay. That's good, Bill. Okay, as Bill says, it's principle, isn't it? That principle is that synonymous term that says that the universe, including man, is under the government of the system and science of principle. That the principle which is God is our only government. We're not under the government of astrology or false beliefs or people or false governments. We're only under the government of God, theology. So one step beyond democracy is theology. Huh? We're under the government of God. Theocracy, huh? Under the government of God would be theocracy. higher than democracy, which is just government by the people, but it's the highest we know today. But eventually our government will be a government under principle, then it becomes theocracy. Okay? Then the fifth day was it, and God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the fish and the fowl, the abundant fish and fowl. And so therefore, in giving a metaphysical explanation, let's say to the fish, what would the fish stand for? And why would they stand for abundance to those people in those that day? Why did the biblical writers use fish to mean abundance? Because the fish were always abundant. The many eggs in a fish, I mean, a fish reproduces itself in abundance. It has many, many eggs. So therefore, as Ellen said, for many, many generations, fish always meant abundance. That's why Jesus fed with the fishes and the loaves. Always, a fish is a symbol to have the abundance of life. And the fowl, the birds, what did they stand for? Symbolically. Flying above the earth. So birds stood for the exaltation above the earth. So we see then that we could say that in translating the fifth day into metaphysical language, we could say that the fifth day stands for that inner fullness and abundance and multiplication of God, which brings exaltation above limitations or restrictions. So that fifth day is bringing forth that infinite abundance of God, the multiplication of God, which exalts us above the earth, above limitations, above being robbed of the abundance of life. And that synonymous term that lets us talk about the abundance of life, the multiplication of life, the newness of life, the exaltation of life is life. So we see then that the fifth day of creation is really symbolically saying, let there be life. Let there be the abundance of life, the newness of life, the exaltation of life. And that we will see is what really is going on within being. That's how we would interpret the fifth day. Then the sixth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth the animals. Let us make man in our image and likeness. So we have animals and man. Now, Virginia, what was your question about the sixth day? Yes, you asked it today. You asked it a few hours ago. It was about why were the animals created first and why was man created second. So what would animals mean, symbolically speaking? What do animals stand for, metaphysically? Mrs. Eddy gave us a hint in the textbook. Qualities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So she would show like the worm has patience. Or the cattle, how did she show? Were they perseverance or diligence? But she showed that animals have different qualities. Like I like to say, like the fox is foxy, or the lion is courageous. Or she shows a little worm has the patience to get to where it's going. So animals always stood for various individual qualities of God, like perseverance or courage or foxiness, cleverness, patience, things like this. So those individual qualities